Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Peter Edwin Krasinski, conductor, organist, and music educator. Peter, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, it's good to be here. Thank you.
I heard so much about you. By the way, you have a great website. I want you to give out the website address right now.
Oh, absolutely. It's www.krasinski.org. And I always make the joke that .org must mean organ. So that's K-R-A-S-I-N-S-K-I.org.
Now, pipe organs and Bach are among your real specialties and your passions. And for people who are not familiar with either or just one of them, talk to me about Bach first. Why are you so passionate about Bach? I know why, but I want you to explain it.
Well, one of the reasons it's kind of funny is that I was actually born on March 21st.
Oh, God.
And that happens to be the traditional date that they recognize Bach's birthday. So
it was like in the stars.
Yeah, it was kind of like in the stars, and I always enjoyed that little coincidence. In fact, I have three artistic sisters, and one of them actually made a birthday card for me as though it was from Bach. She wrote it in big, flowery script and put the paper in tea and burned the edges of it and pretended that it was Bach himself writing me a letter. So I've always had a sort of almost personal relationship with Bach, at least in my imagination. And of course, there's the music itself. I mean, who can not be impressed by da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-bum right away? It's got your attention. And the man definitely was had what we call it.
Can you remember the first time you heard Bach?
You know, I really don't know exactly, but
Let me rephrase that. Can you remember the first time that Bach clicked in you?
Oh, probably the first time I heard him. I think the thing that's fun is my mom was an amateur cellist.
She played
in the Quincy Symphony, so that even when I was probably in the womb, I was listening to music of an orchestra. And my dad, I like to say, played the radio really well. He helped develop radar during World War II with 2,000 other really wonderful Americans. So I had this neat combination of both musical parents and inventive parenting. So that all kind of comes together in the music of Bach, too, because he was not only a wonderful musician, but also a very intriguing mathematician in the way he put things together. I would say probably some of the most impressive Bach I remember hearing was probably the beautiful Arioso. Also, I was a churchgoer as a kid and still work in churches and synagogues and all over the place and religious places. So I do remember hearing wonderful music such as the Jesu Joya, Man's Desiring, and all these other beautiful things that he had created.
Yeah, Bach is an amazing composer. Have you read that book? It came out about 40 years ago. Gödel, Escher, and Bach?
Yes, I have.
By Hofstadter, Richard Hofstadter.
Yeah, it's quite an amazing book. And
it really brings out the intricacies of Bach's music.
It does. And it's funny because there are some that say that writing about music is like dancing about architecture. But I actually think dancing about architecture sounds kind of cool.
Yeah, I do too. I do too.
I like reading it.
Now, a pipe organ. And this, I have to preface this by saying I don't play any musical instruments, and it's probably just as well for me, for the audience.
Well, what I like to say to you is thank goodness somebody has to listen.
That's right.
And that's a great teamwork.
Now, but
play is have someone else hear it.
I've interviewed many musicians before, including pianists and people who are playing the violin and the sax. The pipe organ strikes me as like, how do you even get introduced to playing that, what looks like one of the most complex instruments around?
Well, again, it probably started, first of all, at church. I grew up in Quincy, Massachusetts.
I grew up in Watertown, Massachusetts.
Ah, so you're really pretty close by.
Yeah.
A neat little church. It's still there. It's called Bethany Church, and my family actually had connections to it years ago. I think my parents actually met at that church in a youth group, and a number of their friends got married through that little arrangement. And Anyway, so I was used to hearing organ pretty young. And I do remember, I think when I was maybe 4 or 5 years old, my mother said, okay, we're not going to go to church anymore. You're going to go to Sunday school. And on the way down to Sunday school, I liked the music in the church and the windows and the choir so much that I actually bit my mother. And she said, okay, I guess we're going to go back to church. I just love the power of a pipe organ because it's the real thing. You know, amplified music has a lot of power, but there's just something about actual pipes that are making sound from each one of the pipes. The sound is coming from each individual pipe, and so it fills a room in a way that just cannot be replicated really well electronically. And so that was part of it, too. So the reality of that big, big sound, the power of it, I think was very impressive to me. And along with the church, my parents were really cool, and they brought me to Stoneham Town Hall when I was just a kid, too, to watch a few silent movies on a theater organ that was there. Happens to be a Wurlitzer theater organ in Stoneham Town Hall. So I sort of got the bug early on. And then there were two other people that really were influential. One was E. Power Biggs.
Okay,
he had
yes.
A number of
yes.
recordings, and he was actually from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Got to meet him a few times.
Oh, man.
And then, of course, he was sort of considered somewhat academic by some people, but what was cool about him was he'd play organs all over Europe, and especially mechanical action organs, and he would make records, and so that we could experience these recordings. Now it's easy as anything to just go online and hear an organ almost anywhere. But back then, that was pretty special. And then there was the showman. That was Virgil Fox.
Yeah.
And Virgil Fox just was, he would put on shows with his electronic touring organ and a light show. It was like a rock and roller, and he was also a great musician. So both of those people were really people that fed my love of the organ.
Now, were you playing on any other musical instruments before you learned the pipe organ?
Yes. I had trouble reading music as a kid, and I think I'm still slightly dyslexic here and there, so reading music wasn't my favorite thing. Hearing it and playing it back and also making it up was my favorite thing, first of all. So we had a piano in the parlor, and I used to bang around on it and have fun. But then I actually quit piano lessons. I said, that's it. I can't handle this. So I took up the violin.
Oh.
And the thing that's cool about the violin was I got to play with other people. And I ended up joining a group that I think it's called something a little different now, but back in the day it was called the Greater Boston Youth Symphony Orchestra.
I remember that.
And I played violin with them since I think I got in at seventh grade and played through all high school with them. And that was really cool because, you know, I wasn't really that good at the violin. I was okay, which meant that I was sort of in the back of the second violin section, which of course meant that I was next to the wind players and the brass players and got to hear, I was sort of in the heart of the orchestra. And we went through lots of great repertoire with those great music directors back then, really great teachers in the Greater Boston Youth Symphony. And so I was experiencing all this repertoire. And by high school, I was really... That's when I really started to say, okay, it's time to learn to read music and get back into the organ.
So, okay, when I did knowing how to play a piano help you at all in playing the pipe organ?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, because it looks like if the pipe organ was like a protozoa, it looks like, I mean, if the piano was a protozoa, it looks like the pipe organ would be Homo erectus.
Yeah,
you know, it's like it's like a huge instrument. First of all, it's got physical presence that's I'm always amazed by, and then it's just got so many things that you can pull and step on.
Yes.
I mean, it's like it was like designed by Martians or something like that. So how do you even begin? I mean, where do you go to get lessons to learn?
It's a great question, and again, I kind of revert to my childhood a little bit. I remember I was obsessed with the organ in that church I spoke about earlier, and I asked, you know, gee whiz, I want to play the organ after church. I was pretty young, and the lady was really cool, and she said, after church, you can play the organ. And I went up to the organ, and she said, you may play that note. and she put on all the pipes she could, all the sounds, you know, what they call pulling out all the stops.
Right.
And, of course, I pushed this one button, and out came this huge roar. And then I smiled, and she looked at me very pleasantly and said, now learn to play the piano. And that was part of learning to, you know, one step at a time. Learning the keyboard skills with the fingers was really important because
right.
if you don't know what you're going to do with your fingers, what are you going to do when you get to your feet? But the other cool thing about the organ is what might look complicated initially is actually designed to help you. When you see more than one keyboard, that means that with your left hand, you could play a sound or pipes that sound like maybe strings. And the right hand, you could pick a row of pipes that sound like an oboe or like a clarinet. And all of a sudden, you've got your orchestra. And then with your feet, you could pick a sound that sounds a little bit, maybe even like a string bass. All of it created by pipes that are being fed by wind. But all together, they kind of sound like an orchestra. And that's why all those buttons and hoodiggies are there, is to be able to have a variety of sound.
It still looks, and I watched you play on your website, and I've watched many other people play pipe organs too. It looks like it's you really have to be multidextrous in order to competently play a pipe organ.
Well, the famous American composer Charles Ives wrote a wonderful piece called Variations on America. It's actually Variations on My Country Tis of Thee, but let's not get too academic. It's a great little piece. He wrote it when he was a teenager, and at the very end of it, he plays the melody with his hands, but on the feet, he plays extra notes that are very fun, and he said, it's almost as fun as playing baseball. And that's how it becomes. You know, just like anything, it's a skill. You have to work a little bit to get it together. I had the good fortune of having a wonderful teacher. My first teacher was Father David Gallagher. He used to play the organ at Old South Church in Boston.
Wow.
For the choir. And that alone was a kind of a nifty thing. It was sort of a crossover, having a Catholic priest playing in a Protestant church. And he ended up recommending to me to go to Boston University to study with his teachers. And that would be Max Miller, who was at BU, and also George Faxon, who was the organist at Trinity Church. And by being with these wonderful people, they helped me to formulate the skill to get out into the reality of playing music that was in my head, which was always one of my favorite things to do. I love reading music, but I also love making it up.
So you're then that's the composer part of what you do.
It's funny because in general, I admire composers a lot. And yes, in a way, I'm a composer, but mainly I'm an improviser.
Okay.
In that I take ideas and formulate them in that way. And I really should start sitting down in a chair, getting a piece of paper and a pencil out and start writing.
Oh, no, because it's all in your head now.
Yeah, it's there and it kind of flows. So it's fun.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch, my guest tonight, and it's great to talk to him. Peter Edwin Krasinski, conductor, organist, and music educator. We've been talking about the pipe organ. The thing about pipe organs, too, is because of their size and because of the way that they're installed, they're defined by locations. Unlike a saxophone or a guitar, which people carry with them, so locations have a pipe organ, and they usually don't ever change that. Is that true?
That is a wonderful description. You've nailed it, and I'm going to copy you. I'm going to steal that, because that really is absolutely true. Unless you have an organ that's been, you know, brought out of one space and put into another, it does. So the location does define what is the organ going to be, how big is it going to be. And believe it or not, every single one of those pipes that is making a sound, and by the way, what you see isn't anywhere near the number of pipes that are behind the facade, those all get voiced by someone, whether they're going to be louder or softer, what kind of vowel sound they're going to have. all of that is designed to match the acoustic of the room. And I'm very fortunate in that I have really four organs that I play almost every week, one of them being the very wonderful and auspicious organ at Mechanics Hall in Worcester. That's an 1864 organ, restored and up to its original condition as a mechanical action organ, speaking into one of the world's best acoustics. And this is such a treasure that Worcester has. And I certainly hope that your listeners will visit Mechanics Hall website to see our ongoing organ series that we just had a wonderful concert yesterday with Carol Williams, and we're going to be having members of the Worcester chapter play next Wednesday at noon. These are all free concerts, by the way. And then Gavin Klein will be playing the third Wednesday in August at Mechanics Hall. So that's one kind of instrument, definitely built for the room. Another one that I enjoy playing, a house organist at the Providence Performing Arts Center. And that is a five-keyboard instrument from 1927. That instrument was a transplant. It came originally from a theater in Chicago, which was going to be destroyed. And believe it or not, there was a fellow who said, I want that in my house. And for a while, it lived in St. Paul, Minnesota. And then in 1982, the infamous mayor of Providence purchased
Buddy Cianci?
Buddy Cianci. Buddy Cianci was on the phone. He said, let me hear it. And so someone held up the phone to this organ, and he said, okay, let's buy it.
Classic Buddy Cianci story.
Isn't that an amazing thing?
Well, first of all, I sort of want to get back to this guy who had a pipe organ in his house.
Like, oh, yeah.
What kind of a house did he have?
Yeah, he had probably a pretty big house, and the way that works, usually for people that want a pipe organ in their home, they have a big basement.
Oh, okay.
And they put grills in the floor of their living room, a pretty big living room in this case, and they put the console, that's the thing with the keyboard and the pedals and all that stuff, up in the living room. But the organ itself, all the guts are down below, underneath the floor.
Wow.
And the amazing thing is people are still doing that. I was just at a wonderful convention, the American Theater Organ Society was in Milwaukee last week, and heard a number of home organ installations. Many people have rescued these organs from their theaters and put them in their homes to play. And so there's another situation where the transplant comes into play.
Yeah.
And of course, the third type of organ I play is the liturgical type, and I have the good fortune of playing regularly at the Basilica of Our Lady of Perpetual Help in Boston. That's Mission Church, and that has an acoustic of about 5 to 6 seconds.
Wow.
It's like visiting Paris in the middle of Boston. It's great.
Wow.
And so I get to play that organ, usually for masses on Saturday afternoon and for special holidays as well. So I'm very fortunate in that I get to play all three of the major types of pipe organs that there are.
No, I don't want us to run out of time, because I got to ask you about this, because one of the coolest things you do is to accompany silent films.
Oh, yeah.
When did you start this?
Well, it's funny because when I was a little kid, I had three older sisters. Among other things like playing the guitar on the front porch at sunset before dinner, I mean, it was a very nice musical family there. But one of the things they like to do, and they introduced me to this idea, is to put on a record and then break out some paper and some watercolors and just let's paint. What do you hear in the music? What does it look like to you in your head?
Mm.
And so from a very young age, I was making this connection between the visual and the sonic worlds. And so now that connection has been developed to a pretty intense skill height in terms of watching a film. What I do is I memorize the movie. I get to know whatever the instrument is that I'm going to play. Recently, I played a silent film in Helsinki, Finland, on Europe's largest concert hall organ, very new organ, very amazing instrument, worth looking into on the internet. And I also like to get to know where I'm playing. So I like to hang around for a few days and get to know the people.
You also have to get to know the instrument, don't you?
And get to know the instrument, yeah. I like to spend a few days with, especially a big one. And it's been really such a joy to be able to. The other part of it that's kind of a little, seems almost mysterious, is how does the music happen? Well, as I said before, I was lucky enough to be in an orchestra. I was also in the Tango Festival chorus and was singing, you know, with the Boston Symphony in front of me. And all of that music kind of just stuck inside, and I'm able to choose sort of on the fly while the movie is happening. The music just kind of formulates itself and becomes a score. And the other beautiful thing is that the audience is really important. I can kind of feel like where the audience wants to go with the
okay.
film.
Okay, yeah.
Therefore, it becomes a completely unique event every time.
So you've played in the background for the films Hunchback of Notre Dame, Lon Chaney.
Yes.
Obviously Phantom of the Opera. That has to be that's sort of redundant.
it's a particularly fun film.
Oh my God.
For that movie, it's also has an opera in it.
Yeah.
If you recall, the opera by Gounod, it's called Faust, is happening on stage. There's a ballet scene, there is singing. There's all this stuff. And so what I've learned to do is, in those instances, when there's actual music that's happening on the screen, I try as best I can to copy exactly what that music would have been.
Oh, nice.
And so that can use, you know, a lot of skill sets there. First of all, just letting the music happen and be improvisational. But, you know, when Christina is singing the high notes of the Jewel song, you might recall that the Phantom says she's singing to bring down the chandelier. Well, I actually put in some wrong notes that she sounds like she's not singing it quite right, and then the chandelier comes to a crash on the floor, and that can be quite a lot of sonic fun as well.
The unmasking of the Phantom, though, is going to be the big moment.
That is a big, big moment. That's a big deal. And, of course, there's so many wonderful films that are not just the Halloween films.
Now, you did Metropolis. You did the background to Metropolis.
Ah, yes. Metropolis is, I'm really happy to be able to announce that I'm going to be accompanying Metropolis at the Providence Performing Arts Center on October 30th, the day before Halloween.
Oh, wow.
And so you can go to the Providence Performing Arts Center website, and I think you can get tickets now. For this really once-in-a-lifetime event to hear Metropolis on a 1927 Wurlitzer is going to be quite the event. So that's on October 30th in Providence. And
also, I would mention, if you've never seen a Metropolis on the big screen, do it.
Oh, yeah. It's unbelievable. It's a crazy movie.
It is.
But it has a great message, too. It's a very beautiful message. And that is that the heart should be the mediator between the mind and the hands. In other words, the people that are doing the work and the people that are creating the community in which we live should all be ruled by our hearts. And I think that this is a great time in our history to have a message like that that's out there.
Now, few more questions before we run out of time. And I want to talk to you about the performance playing the pipe organ. You do a lot of religious playing, and then you do a lot of secular playing. Talk to me about the difference in how you approach playing in those two very different venues.
This is a great question. So when you hear Ella Fitzgerald and she's singing A Tisca to Tasca,
yeah,
you know, she's got that swing to it. She's got something going on. The words aren't even there. It's like, what is that scat going on? And then the rhythm is completely different than, I'm sure, the original tune was happening. But she knows her audience. She knows who she's singing to. And what makes my life I'm so grateful for my musical life, because I'm able to be accommodating to the situation. When I'm playing for a religious service, and if there happens to be a reading that has to do with something unusual, for instance, the Transfiguration or some incredible thing in the New Testament where Jesus is going up the mountain and his face shines and there's all sorts of stuff going on. Well, you can be darn sure that I'm going to do something improvisational by the end of that service that kind of would copy that. Because each one of those places, the concert hall, the liturgy, and the theater, are all based on drama. Each one of them have a dramatic point to them, the storytelling point. And so it's more about what's the same in these places than what's different. It's mainly the reason the music happens. And I think any good improviser really concentrates on what is the point, what's the theme, what's the idea. When I do a silent film, I almost imagine that the movie director's there over my shoulder and making sure that I don't muddle up the story with some silly musical idea, but instead that I'm following what the story is in the film. And I feel the same way when I'm playing a religious service, and I feel the same way if I'm presenting an improvisation in concert.
We're going to have to stop there. We're completely out of time. My guest tonight is Peter Edwin Krasinski, conductor, organist, and music educator. I had so many more questions, Peter. We'll have to have you back. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.